I'm just another guy with a truck. But because I chose to drive all the way from Canada, 1,528 miles, they knew I was coming. And they spread the word. John, they were sharing our Instagram stories all week long, the whole trip down.
You're listening to the Get Out and Drive podcast with John Custom Car Nerd Meyer and Jason Old Car Guy Carr. We'll be bringing you gearheads everything you never wanted to know about cars and why they should be on the road and not in your garage. Are you ready to get out and drive?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another super fantastic half-cut episode.
Special edition.
A special edition of the Get Out and Drive podcast. My name is Jason Old Car Guy Carr.
I'm still John Custom Car Nerd Meyer.
And we have a very special guest.
Just this weird guy, Grant Tommy, Straight Six fan on YouTube.
So for those of you guys who don't know, John and I have just traveled 1,500 miles from basically St. Stephen, New Brunswick, or Bangor, Maine, to Atlanta, Georgia for the C10s in the city. We endured the heat, 85 plus degrees of Atlanta weather.
What is that in Celsius?
That's a lot. That's like 29 degrees Celsius.
Many.
Wow.
And we had fun at C10s in the city. Lots of great people, lots of great trucks. And the after show of C10s in the city took place at the Trackside Tavern. John?
That's where all the deals are made.
That's where all the deals are made, after the show. So for those of you guys who don't know, the show was basically put on by SQRBDY, which is Rick Cheeseman and his wife, Sarah. Sarah is kind of the grunt behind everything that happened today. And
she told me personally, she runs the whole thing and everyone should know.
I was going to say, typically, like, if we all think back to our weddings, who did most of the work? Probably the wives.
It was. You know, and we've got to give them all the credit. And in this case, we've got to give Sarah all the credit. We're calling this a overdrive episode, or a
uncut
detour episode, or a half-cut episode. What do you want to call this?
I tried to keep it from being a backseat of the police car episode.
Because it's pretty easy in Atlanta to just go about your friendly way and do something that you wouldn't normally do after leaving a tavern. And
I mean, hats it to John. He did, in fact, keep us out of the back of a cop car.
I did.
In fact, he did, but it didn't mean we didn't get into or try to get into some shenanigans, Grant.
It didn't end well.
It did not end well. The whole point of this podcast is just a laid back, few beers in, you know, just
recap the day.
So this is like drunk history.
Drunk history.
Well, it's an interesting intersection, right? Because John's on day five. Actually, have we rolled over midnight? So day six now. Yeah,
it is day six currently.
Day five for Jason. I flew in. So day two for me. I flew in less than 24 hours ago. So it's this really interesting, like, intersection of when we all showed up to the shenanigans, but the pinnacle, right, was C10s in the city.
Yeah. So if I had to ask each of you, what was the biggest thing that you had to take away from the C10s in the city? I'll give mine first. And mine is the camaraderie, the family, the people that were involved in C10s in the city. They really made you feel like you belong there, that no matter what, it was a family-oriented show. Wouldn't you agree, John?
Well, I certainly would. I know there was a lot of trucks there that were super clean, but I saw just, I don't know, how many trucks do you think were there? 250?
Easily.
Okay. Out of that, I saw, for real, maybe three trucks being trailered.
Yep.
That's pretty good numbers.
Well, and in fact, I interviewed a guy, and his name is Shannon, and he only come from a few hours away, and they claim that they trailered their vehicle. I did not have the heart to tell them that we just drove 1,528 miles to Atlanta for this show. But there was a ton of really neat trucks. Now, one of the conversations I had with one of the representatives from AMD was, you know, when you go to these car shows today, it's a lot different today than what it was 10 to 15 years ago when you walk into a show or you drive into a show and everything is sparkle and shine and chrome and everything. Today, it's all about people appreciating original paint, original scars.
What's dents. Left of the original paint.
Absolutely.
Well, now I want to pause there for a second. So what would you guys suspect that the percentage was of like great paint versus patina versus original paint?
I don't know what the percentage was between the three, but I would say your shiny repainted show class vehicles was probably a very minimal percentage compared to the patina or the original painted trucks.
I would disagree slightly just because, like, I mean, like Mississippi Mud, right? This is like the far extreme of, so that's Robbie's truck, one of Robbie's trucks.
Sure.
And then whatever the green one was called, the green truck as we sort of, but then there was like that, the 53, that was sort of the faux patina, right? Like these, like it was an airbrush job that was meant to make, like, I don't know. I don't think that the real genuine patina was more than, gosh, 20% of the whole show.
Maybe not. But I think if you look at those guys who put their money and their time and effort into a complete restoration of these trucks, I would say that those trucks were in the minority of faux patina, patina, original paint trucks.
The ones that you're going to go out and drive and not care if it gets, you know,
absolutely
the rock chips.
We brought this up earlier when we were driving, Jason.
Yeah.
Now, I want to hear Grant's opinion. Patina. Let me start here. In favor or against?
I mean, short answer, in favor.
Okay, short answer, in favor. My answer is yes, in favor. Real Mother Nature patina, check mark, yes. Faux patina, not for me. Touched up, blended, good looking rust repair patina, I like that. I'm with that. Because you can take a very terrible looking farm truck that needs rockers, needs wheelhouses, needs everything, fix the bottom half of it, and blend it, and people are never going to know. They're going to go, wow, where'd you find that rust-free truck? They didn't realize you replaced half the bottom of it, you know? Now, Grant, knowing that, what is the year that you believe patina stops being cool and just becomes shitty paint?
So, like,
it's a hard question.
Right. Well, so my initial gut reaction as you were explaining all that was to Jason, first off. So, like, I like what he did with Dale the truck, right? So, like, the rocker, like, the cab corners clearly needed repair, right? So, he addressed the things that, like, if I don't do this now, it's only going to get worse. But, like, he's got some rust in the rear quarters, like, behind the rear wheel wells that's, like, you know what? I can live with that. So, Jason's truck's a 77.
Yellow, hashtag yellow trim mafia.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, beige brigade, right?
Yep. Hashtag beige brigade.
I feel like there's got to be like a ruling. Again, I'm an architect by trade. Started my career in historic preservation. It was originally, if you wanted to be on the registry, you had to be a 50-year-old building. So I feel like there's got to be like a ruling clock. It feels like 30 years probably to answer your question, John.
Okay. So first-gen Dodge Dakota, rusty roof, paint peeling off. Lowered on big wheels?
I mean, I guess.
Is that cool?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
94 full-size Ram. First year.
Nope, nope. Paint, it's not 30 years old. It's 29.
Paint's peeling. Yeah, paint's peeling off. Dodge paint's flying off. Clear coat's coming off. Looks like hell. Cool? Not cool?
Well, I think, or is it
because I've already made a meme and I took a picture of a 53 Chevy that was a field car, rusted all hell. And I said, is this cool? And people said, no, it's a rusty piece of junk. It's a farm car, field car. I said, well, what about this one? It's the same exact car, but on the ground, different attitude. Now, all of a sudden, people think it's cool. Does altitude affect whether or not you think patina's cool?
I think you've got to look at each individual case separately. I don't think you can draw a line at 30 years. Maybe it's 29 or 28 years old. Maybe it's 32 or 33 years old. Like, the thing is, you look at a vehicle. We talked about this, John, in a previous episode on Fox Body Mustangs.
Yep.
With faded paint. They were known to do that. Are they cool because they have patina? Okay, to some degree, maybe. Yes, if someone has done the chassis, done the wheels, done the tires, done the motor, done the trans, but left the body in its original condition, is that cool? I believe, yes, it is. But if you're driving a 84 Mustang, and it's a piece of crap, and it sounds like a piece of crap, and the wheels are stock, and the tires are dry rotted, is that cool? Well, probably not. I think you got to look at each individual case to say whether something is cool or whether it isn't. Grant, what do you think?
Well, I'm tempted to. There's a case study out there for exactly what you talked about, but don't really want to alienate that person. So, but I think this discussion, there's a nuance to this discussion where there's patina, right? Like, that's a category, and then there's survivor car, right? So take my Grand Prix, doesn't have patina. I wouldn't call it patina at all. There's really bad paint match repair on some rock chips and things like that. So I think, like, you know, car that era, 1979, only 2 years newer than your 77 square body. Like, I think there's a case to be made to say, well, there's survivor car and there's patina. And I think what you just said, there's a time to do this case by case study and say patina or survivor car, or do just paint it.
Well, and I think that we all can agree, the three of us sitting here can agree, that when you walk into a car show and you see a car that's, well, first of all, you've heard it roll in, and it sounds amazing. Someone's clearly done the engine and the exhaust to make it sound the way it does, and it rolls in, and maybe the paint's not 100% perfect. But then there's these guys who pull in with their 35-year-old whatever it is, and just because it's 35 years old, they think it's cool, but it's a piece of crap. There is certainly a line that needs to be drawn between someone who's taken the time to do minor repairs to try and keep it as original as possible. Maybe they've done the drivetrain to make it more reliable. That patina becomes a secondary part of whether that thing is cool or not. John, I don't know.
Patina on an OBS Chevy truck.
Yes or no? Yes, I think it's possible.
You think you'd pull that off?
I think an OBS truck with patina, uh-huh, can be pulled off. There's very few areas of North America that will produce natural patina.
Crispy.
You've got the deserts of New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, maybe Florida. You know, some of those places are going to produce that sunburnt patina that some guys are looking for on fairly modern trucks, like OBSs, like brick nose and bull nose Fords.
First gen S10.
For clarity, just for the listeners out there, right? So when you say OBS Chevy, I assume you mean 80 to 98 range. Absolutely. Right?
Well, and I'd say OBS because that phrase has been coined, but I call them CKs.
Well, what I was getting at was, like, I think there needs to be a mental mind shift to what patina means for that era, right? So, like, that era of, especially the earlier, like the 88 through, well, we'll call it 92, like the clear coat burned off super fast, right? Sure. So patina, as we know it, or what you think, what you probably naturally go to for something older is way different than that 88 to 98, like quote unquote patina actually probably means like that kind of like signature. The clear coat's like burning away on the hood, right?
Yeah,
like
and you've got a dull color paint job versus the Mississippi mud that that United by Trucks has, where the paint is not just gone. We're down to bare metal, rust, and not just rust, but rust kind of fading down through the existing paint. When I see patina, that's what I see, is I physically see bare metal rust running down into the original color of the vehicle. Is patina clear coat peeling off of a 90s Chevrolet truck?
Well, and
I don't know.
I personally think so. I think it's a moving target, right? Because, and I don't want to derail the whole conversation and turn it into a whole nother subject matter that we're not talking about. But like, Jason, you and I, we did a show once upon a time talking about like rat rod is the most, like, everybody's got a different definition of what rat rod means. Yep. And so I think the important thing to the discussion that we're having is for patina to be like this thing, you also have, like, the body has to be, say, 93% straight, right? Like, yeah, it's going to have some nicks, some bruises, and some little dents here and there, but, like, okay, straighten the body out first before you live with the patina thing. And I think that is like, mission critical to what we're talking about.
So you don't want an CK OBS truck that looks like it's been through a hurricane, and then it's on 24 inch wheels on the ground.
Or a hailstorm.
Or a hailstorm or something like that. I mean, because it's, you talk about peeling clear coat. The only reason that early patina looks good is because they have a small coat of primer and they have enamel, no clear coat. So now we're going post 81, 82, you get into clear coat on square bodies. There were several two-tone dark blue, light blue squares there today that had OE clear coat peeling off of them. I didn't think they looked crappy.
No, for sure. Like, and again, it's all in, I think if we really look back at, I mean, we can describe patina as different things across the board. But when it comes to actually showing your truck at a car show, I think a lot of it has to do with the preservation. What did you do to make that truck or put that truck in a showable condition? Did you ever wash it? No. Well, then it doesn't belong in a show. Did you take the time to maybe Scotch bright it, smooth it out, polish it back, whatever was there, and make it at least somewhat presentable? Sure. That is patina. So many people confuse patina with simply just a shitty paint job or whatever come out of the factory that didn't last. Patina to me is, my personal opinion with patina, I wouldn't call Dale, my truck, a patina job, a patina paint job on that car or that truck, because simply it has most of its original paint. It's not rusted through. It's not dripping down, but there's trucks out there that have the rust because the sun has physically baked off what the factory gave it. We go back into the 50s, 60s, and 70s where there was no clear coat. We were talking single stage. Some of those factory trucks got two coats of paint, if they were lucky, and it didn't take a lot of sun to bleach them out to the point where rust happened, the paint was disappearing, and that's what I call patina.
My opinion on a lot of cars and trucks is less altitude, more attitude. Mm. Because you can take a rusty-looking average field car and put it on the ground and put some cool wheels underneath it, all of a sudden it's cool. Up tall, it looks just like a field car. I think the height of a vehicle and attitude of the car has a lot to do with whether or not I think it looks good as being a not shiny patina car and skipping over and making a hard left turn. Grant, clear coated shiny patina, yes or no?
Well, I wanted to divert back to the whole concept of, again, I don't want to turn this into a discussion of what is rat rod, right? But so my personal opinion of what rat rod means is, like, it's really harkening back to, like, the quintessential what was post-World War II hot rodding, and this idea of these, like, airplane mechanics or whatever coming back from the war, and they're doing these things, and they're the quintessential hot rodding, right? And they're so excited, they have their thing together, their rides in primer or whatever, they're not done to paint, but they just want to go out and hot rod the thing. To your point, John, like, stance and altitude, and, like, the thing doesn't have to have a good looking paint job, but it could have good body, like, everything else is done, right? Good body work, good lines. You pop the hood, the fender wells are paint, like, rattle canned or whatever, but they did good prep work. They smoothed the firewall. They did all these things. The interior's got, like, just this kick ass, like, leather interior. Like everything else is done. I don't want to discredit what this person has done for the whole composition of what the ride is, like the suspension, like they four linked it, they coilovers, like everything else is done, right? Like, it's still a hot rod. It's still, they did it. I'm not going to discredit it just because it doesn't have, like, a candy apple red paint job on it.
Well, and to that point, like, today at that show, if we're using the 250 trucks that we saw as a kind of a benchmark of the number of trucks that were there, like, I saw a few trucks that were quote unquote faux patina.
Yeah, and that's
a no for me, dog.
No, it's a no for me as well.
Times three. Like, what? if you're gonna go through the effort to do all the that.
What did that truck look like before you, in my opinion, effed it up? Like, was the original paint in rough condition or quote unquote patinaed previous to you grinding down the paint that was there to bare metal to try and make it look like it was rusted? Like I don't want, again, like you said, Grant, I don't want to discredit these people who took the time and effort to do that, but in my opinion, it probably looked better before you took your grinder and your DA to it. John, what do you think?
I think that 100%. I think that there is one place out there that's doing blended patina or full vehicle faux patina to make it look like Mother Nature has done it, and that's Street Machinery.
Exactly. And we, like, there was a couple of trucks there that you could tell. I mean, I shouldn't say you could tell, but a trained eye could tell that was not the way nature intended that patina to look. But they did a very, very good job at trying to mimic what Mother Nature intended that to do. And in order to preserve that, some of the trucks, probably half a dozen or more that I saw, in fact, tried to seal in that faux or Mother Nature looking patina with a satin type clear coat or even a gloss clear coat to try to maintain what either Mother Nature had done or what they had intended to look like Mother Nature had done. Grant, I don't know about you, but there was a few trucks there that looked presentable with the faux-ish patina.
So two thoughts, like one, like, again, in the effort to suck up to you, Jason, like, with Dale a truck, like, there's a difference between, like, blending, which I think you did, right? Like, you, like, okay, I've got to make this cab corner repair. I've got to make it, like, you know, you got to, like, match, like, the character of the truck, right? So there's blending. And then, again, I'm going to reach back to my, as an architect in historic preservation years ago, there's the idea of, man, everything's got a story to tell. And so when I clear coat the patina of this truck, it's encapsulating or like, dude, this truck's had a rough life. It's been through, it was, you know, in 1954, it was actually, you know, hauling seed bags from the feed mill, you know, out to, well, we're in Georgia, right? So we're planting cotton or whatever, right? And it then after when Uncle Buck couldn't tune a carb and it sat out in the pasture for then 30 years and just sat out there and it baked in the sun and all this stuff, like, that's another thing. And I think there's something just valuable about, let's preserve the story that needs to be told about the history of this truck.
For sure. And I think one thing that I believe that the three of us can agree on is that patina, true patina, only happens one way, and that's with Mother Nature. Am I right with that?
Well, of course. I mean, it's natural. It's no different than people try to copy patinaed copper. You can do whatever you want to, but copper, real copper patina, looks like the Statue of Liberty. It's green and it's streaked and it's bright white and it's all sorts of colors. I think there's people out there that are trying to replicate what they believe Mother Nature, they've done no research, and they grab a red brown rattle can and they're like, okay, here a little, here a little, here a little, here a little, here a little. And it looks like your 4-year-old did it. And that drives me up a wall.
Yeah, there's very few people out there that can, and I can't name any names by no means, but there's very few people out there that can mimic with a rust repair, like you said, with Dale the truck, having to do the cab corners and rockers. There's very few people that can mimic the natural progression of Mother Nature's patina on a truck. Dale's in pretty good shape. It's got a few nicks and a few scratches here and there, but being able to do the cab corners and rocker panels and match the paint of the time was fairly simple. I didn't have a lot of patina necessarily to have to mimic, but there's guys out there that are doing roof rail repairs or door sill repairs or whatever, that they're trying to mimic the patina that the truck came with and failing miserably. But you look at Mississippi Mud on the UBT truck, and all the repairs that they did with that was firewall, cab corners, and rockers. Down where the paint already was,
yes,
and not where the patina had got to. So when they did the repairs, it was like, oh, we don't even notice that you did repairs because all the patina is on the hood, the roof, and the top of the bed rails. And it's already naturally blended into the existing paint that was there. So, you know, I appreciate guys who try to blend in the Mother Nature's patina, but guys who physically will sand down the paint to get the bare metal to try and make it look like it bleeds, guys, you really got to know what you're doing to make it look like it was meant to be, because otherwise, in my opinion, you kind of look like a fool.
You know, Jason, we sure get to talk a lot.
Yes, and some of us more than others.
Who, me?
I'm not pointing any fingers.
Yes, you are, but we want to hear from our listeners. Just go to our website, getoutanddrive.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click the listener hotline button. We want to hear from you. Cool stories, breakdown stories,
questions, comments,
hate mail,
even hate mail,
even hate mail. You got a car show in your area? Let us know.
Tell us an interesting story.
Let us know what you like to get out and drive. The Get Out and Drive podcast has partnered with RacingJunk.com to offer a pro club membership exclusively for our listeners for just $25 a year.
Just a few perks of the pro club membership include up to 50 free photos per ad, a dashboard to keep track of your listed items, and search alerts so you don't miss out on that must-have part.
Don't forget about the Racing Junk store discount. Free video uploads for your ads, $65 in ad upgrade credits, and an official club member banner on your ads.
Just use promo code POD23 when you sign up on RacingJunk.com.
Grant, you're a G-body guy, right?
Well, sure, presently.
Presently, sure. You know, I'm a pretty diehard G-body guy. At a show, would you walk up to a G-body that was a pro touring car that had a leather interior in it and great wheels and a finished engine compartment and Mother Nature patina? Would you look at that, or would you, that doesn't carry over to that type of vehicle with you?
That's interesting, because like through this discussion, I was thinking long and hard about
that's like, what she said.
Sure. So Welder Up, his airbrush artist, I think on Instagram is like Sin City FX or something.
Yeah,
like
so, yeah.
Like at some point in time, right? Like if you're like, I'm thinking of Steve Darnell's one of his like semi rollback, like, you know, he adds a sleeper cab to a bot. Like at some point, if you want to homogenize or make a consistent like composition, like maybe there's a time and a place to do the faux patina, I guess. But like, as you said, I once upon a time lobbed the idea about like this idea for my Grand Prix. All right. Like this thing came out of this like toxic, like do that. Like rust is dripping. But I was meaning as like, it already has a problem. My Grand Prix already has a problem of like just freckles of rust all over the place, right? In a bad paint match. Like, well, would it be easier to hire an airbrush artist to like solve that problem, like to cover up the actual rust and make it then like have a layer of paint to look like fake rust like dripping down? And I remember on YouTube when I suggested this, like I got multiple, please do not do that. That is like, that's a disaster. So I guess I'm, John, to your mm-hmm. to your point, I have sure. mixed emotions on. Gosh, I don't know. I don't know if it's the right move or not. And I think that's what this discussion is about.
I've seen several disco era muscle cars, you know, second gen Camaro, that were sunbaked. Like, let's just pick one. 70, 76, 78 Z28 Camaro. Baked off paint, baked on stripes, all that crap. I've seen one of those as a pro touring car that's got a brand new interior in it. I saw one on Power Tour. Why did I look at it? It was a field car falling apart, but somebody put all the G chassis stuff underneath it. Had an LS in it. They built this whole car and it was beautiful, but the paint was falling apart. GM, you could see the yellow urethane through the bumpers. The tail looked terrible. All the stripes were on it, but they were on it original and burnt off. To me, that was hot.
Talk a little bit about what you were saying there. I'm pretty sure you meant the Z28, but at the same time, like we continue to talk about patina and whether faux patina or real Mother Nature patina is good on a car. So my thoughts are, Mother Nature, you can't match it. But B, if you're going to try and faux patina, you better be damn good.
Well, or I think there has to be a really good reason to do it, right? Like, so if you had a truck build that there was never a four-door crew cab version of, like a 50s, you know, like we'll say a Chevy 3100 or something.
Sure.
Like, anyway, hey, we're going to make the crew cab version of the 1957 3100 or whatever. Then I get it. Like, you have to like blend it. You have to like make it. But
in that same token though, Grant, you've also got to be able to make it look natural. There's a lot of guys that will just sand down to bare metal, spray their little salt and vinegar concoction on it, let it run down and say, oh wow, that looks original.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you have to sister another cab to a cab, and the one's green
sure.
and the other one's red, and there's metal working involved, like, at some point, like, okay, I want to make this all look homogenous, right?
Sure. But, again, I'm just saying, if you're going to try and fake it, you better be damn good.
Yeah. Yeah.
My biggest thing is, as an artist, the best place, if anybody's listening to this and wants to do faux patina, first of all, stop it. Second of all, if you must trudge forward, go to YouTube, get a book, do whatever you need to, find some pictures of weathered military models from World War II. Go to YouTube and take those techniques that they use in scale to weather tank treads, to make rust appear, all sorts of things. There are thousands of ideas that are for model cars that you can take, and they scale up to do faux patina on a full-size car. Also, start on a Hot Wheel.
Yes.
Start on a die cast. Start on something. If you can make it look like Mother Nature intended on a die cast, you can take those same skills and you can scale them up on a full-size vehicle.
Don't practice on your main project is what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's very important. Don't run off. Try it. If you've never done it before, don't attack your mom's station wagon with a sander and then tell me that it's a rat rod. Stop it.
So I want to reset the conversation a little bit because I think it's a little bit of a disservice to what the day was, right? Like, we were at Seaton's in the city.
Yeah, we got a little off.
No, track. I mean, it's a great conversation. Like, I do want to like bookend this conversation. I think it's still one that needs to be like, let's finish it out, right? Let's talk about it just a little bit more. But I do want to like just make sure we hit on the efforts that Sarah and
most certainly
and Rick did to put this thing
absolutely
together. Something so done so well that Nutjob Jason decided, hey, let's drive 1,500 miles to this thing, right? So, but like, John, when you were asking about the G body, right? Like, mm-hmm. would you like this whole concept of being a G body? Power Nation, right? So
sure.
The Detroit Muscle did a Fox Body build, like in the square, the 4i version, right? Before the Aero nose. And they did like this patina, like we're gonna paint it flat black, and then we're gonna spray some red on it, some orange red on it. And like, I'm like, dude, if you're gonna try that hard to paint, like, cause you're a paint and body guy.
Right.
If you're gonna try that hard to paint and you did all the body work to do all these things, like, just paint it.
Right. Make it shine or whatever.
Right? Yeah. Where I'm at. And I'm like, patina's cool. I'm pro patina, right? But like, as well established here, Mother Nature does the best job doing it. So Fox, you know, I think, you know, my two builds, right, were Fox Body Fairmont and G Body. So John, I'll bounce it back to you. Is that trying too hard there on the, if you're familiar with that build, I guess?
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say yes, trying too hard. I think it was jumping on a bandwagon kind of thing. Do your best with what you have. Please don't sand the paint off your mom's station wagon. Please don't run out and buy a late model Honda and only take the paint off the hood. You know, that type of stuff. Please stop building what somebody tries to force a rat rod late model BMW four-door. Just my opinion. It's a hard line to walk. It really is.
It certainly is. And I mean, so much so that it warranted this conversation that we're having today. You know, and like Grant said, we don't want to take away from the fact that we saw a very well-organized, an awesome turnout of a show at C10s in the City 2023 Atlanta. I can only see this particular show growing beyond what it was this year and probably tenfold in very short years to come. Sarah and Rick have done an awesome job at what they do with this show. I mean, shoot, they got me motivated to drive Dale the truck 1,500 miles.
And put up with me.
And put up with John. And soon, Grant.
Well, yeah, I mean, as you said, the, you know, car community had like, one of the comments earlier was how accepting people were. I mean, I'm the resident Ford guy right here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it was, we're at the bar, we're at the Trackside Tavern, and it's all just like, I mean, it's networking as networking, and we're buds, we're swapping.
Absolutely.
Stories.
And it wouldn't matter whether you were a Ford guy, a Dodge guy, a Toyota guy, whatever it happened to be, right? When you're part of a community, everyone's together. I don't know how many times in the last 4 or 5 days somebody has reached out to me and said, hey, if you need anything, call me or reach out to me, because if I can't help you, I know somebody that can. How amazing is that over a 1,500 mile span that there's that much of a community willing to look after one person?
Maybe they haven't met you yet.
Apparently they have not.
Maybe that's why they want to help.
Either way you look at it.
Succumb to the beard.
It's the beard. It's got to be the beard. No matter how you look at it, it's community related. I think if you're a Ford Mustang guy, or narrow it down even further to a Fox Body community, those guys are going to look after each other. If you're G Body community, they're going to look after you. If you're, it doesn't matter. C10s, square bodies, that generation, like we saw everything today from 50s model trucks all the way up to 90s model OBSs. And we were all part of the same community, no matter which direction we were coming from. It didn't matter whether you were white, black, Latino, whatever. All of those people were there today to be a part of one community, to come together and share their love and their experience of C10s and Chevy trucks.
Well, just real quick, maybe it's worth going around the horn. What were the maybe the top two trucks that stood out for everybody? And if you can't decide, we'll give you an honorable mention, right? Mm. So, John, we'll start with you. Top two trucks and honorable mention if you got one.
Hard to say. I can probably say I liked the blue crew cab square dually that was on 22 Alcoas.
Absolutely. That would have been one of my top two.
I think that's unanimous.
You know, and it's definitely unanimous. That, so in a square body truck, no matter the year, I mean, square bodies over the course of their lifetime spared, what, 15 plus years, depending on whether it was a Suburban or a Blazer. That color, those two colors, the light blue and the dark blue, is a personal favorite of mine. And to see that on a crew cab, long box, dually, Alcoa's
slammed
to the ground. Like, if that's not a turn on for a truck, I don't know what is. That truck did it for me. And before I had the opportunity to get back to the owner to talk to him or her, it was gone.
John, number two on your...
I would probably have to say the blue square that was a very smooth street rod build that was sitting next to us in the VIP row, Jason.
Oh, yes, with the rear window had no frame. It was...
It's flush glass.
Flush glass, no door handles.
He made a lot of parts because he's a machinist.
Yeah.
And he works for, I think it's Joe Gibbs.
Yeah, it's Joe Gibbs, yeah.
And he's in fabrication and in Joe Gibbs' team. And he got billet parts for the dashboard. He didn't like how they fit. He either made his own or he modified the parts that he bought from a company. And he built his dash 2 or 3 times. His seats look like some super fantastic, you know, high zoot, bang, zoom seats. And they're late model Chevy seats with the tops cut off them. And he's a builder and an owner that took all sorts of things and just tightened them up. That truck was smooth. I mean, it had smooth cowl. The grill fit in fabulous. He made his own marker lights in the front. Just the way the thing fit and all the attention to detail with him not being a body man and paint guy and everything as a career, I think him having his hands on that, it is a wonderful truck.
And if you guys want to check that truck out, I've got some video on my YouTube channel, Old Car Guy, but also you can follow him on Instagram. It's Brownell_fabrication is how you can find that truck and check out all the neat stuff that he's done with that truck. I think we all agreed that the crew cab slammed Chevy square body was our probably one of our top two. If I had to give a second one, one of my favorites of that show, there was, I believe, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, John, I think it was a 54 Chevy slammed to the ground. It was on bags. It had a satin clear coat over the patina.
Color was it?
It was like a bluish color.
Okay.
Sitting about the middle of the show, and he had it running a couple times, and Grant, I mentioned to you, we were walking away from it, and he had started up. It rumbled so smooth, had a very distinct sound to it, and it was airbagged, and he was, you know, up bagging it up and down a couple times. That probably was my second choice as one of my two favorites of that show. Grant, what did you see that really struck your nerve?
Also, I mean, yeah, I'm thinking of three right off the top of my head, but first and second, obviously, straight six fan, right? So Rick introduced me to a friend of his, Jonathan, who swapped out, I mean, really going after my heart here, swapped out an LS motor in favor of a 250 cubic inch 9.6 Chevy. And Rick was just like, he went out of his way to mention how they drove it from, you know, here, this region, to Texas and back, no problems. And, it's that reliability of the inline six. But it wasn't just that. It was the fact that, in that his wasn't the only truck of the show that had this like subtle metal flake to it. So it was like a champagne color. And you really wouldn't have realized it had metal flake until you were about 4 feet up on the paint job. So I really love these like subtle rewards. Once you get close, you see something else. But he had built a center console when he had the LS in there. And it was, at once upon a time, I think, a column shift truck. Moved it to an electronic tilt column or something that he couldn't do the column shift. So he custom fabricated a shifter below the driver's seat that looked like basically a lever you would do to move your driver's seat, you know, slide it front and back. It was just like those custom elements that was just like, okay, this is next level. So that's number one for me. Number two is probably, there was a, you know, very common in this realm is easier to find long bed single cabs, and then you do the shorten it up to short bed. But there was a guy with the C20, so an 8-lug truck that did this. And so, I don't know, that kind of stood out to me. So those are probably my one and two. My honorable mention would go to, there was a C60 at the show. That was really cool.
Really good looking truck, yeah. So let's try and start to put a cap on this episode of the Get Up and Drive podcast. And I'm going to share kind of my biggest experience of C10s in the city 2023. And that was, and John, you can attest to this a little bit, is I don't know how many times people would see my truck and see my license plate that said New Brunswick, Canada, and say, oh, you're that guy.
Well, it happened when they were washing the truck.
Yeah, we pulled in.
We were there 2.5 minutes, and they're like, oh, holy crap, you're that. That's him. You're that guy.
You're that guy. Like, and then when I got to find a place to park, Sarah was there, and she says, oh, no, we're going to put you in the VIP section. And I'm thinking, like,
why?
I'm just another guy with a truck. But because I chose to drive all the way from Canada, 1,528 miles, they knew I was coming. And they spread the word. John, they were sharing our Instagram stories all week long, the whole trip down. And at least a dozen people knew who I was just because Rick and Sarah were sharing our stories, and they knew we were coming.
That goes back to the camaraderie.
Absolutely. That was my biggest takeaway from this show, was that we are truly a community, and that people are looking out for you, and that they're willing to put you out there because of one little thing. And for me, that one little thing was, I'm from Canada.
Well, I mean, to that point, like it proves the camaraderie is more than nationwide.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's international.
Well, next year I can see us sponsoring the Get Out and Drive Long Distance Hauler Award.
Hey, absolutely. You know, we sponsor it just because it's us doesn't mean we can't be a part of it. Grant, what did you find to be one of your biggest experiences of the C10s? Again.
Well, the experience, yeah. So, you know, we're at the Trackside Tavern in, what's the suburb we're in? What's the little...
Decatur.
Decatur, yeah. Okay, so, you know, Mob Steel Emma on Instagram, like... The fact that she actually acknowledged that, oh yeah, I know I've chatted with you in DMs, like, but it's great to finally meet you. I'm like, no, I just assumed you were like, I just assume she probably fields random DMs on the use, right? So the fact that she's like, I had submitted when I was doing my Fairmont build, like they were doing a virtual car show during COVID. So it's 2023. That was 2020. 3 years later, we finally meet each other for the first time. She's like, oh, no, I remember your video composition. And I'm like, wait, what? So that, like, for me, it's like, again, I'm the black sheep right here, right? The Ford guy, the fish out of water, like, and someone very prominent in this whole scene, you know, with the Detroit Steel Wheels, recognizes me. And I'm truly blown away. John, your big takeaway from the day, this whole experience?
The camaraderie and talking with Eddie Cabreco, with Andy, and he was extremely helpful. Let me talk to a bunch of different key people and talking with Robbie from UBT. Just getting us involved and saying, hey, these guys are cool. Hey, have you talked to these guys? And then this person invites you to talk to this person, invites you to talk to this person. And it's networking, 100%. And I think that's camaraderie and networking. And there's so many channels that I follow that I constantly repost their stuff. That helps them. Anybody and everybody that I can help bring them up and repost everything and keep them going. I saw that at this show today. Anytime you'd be like, oh yeah, you know, here, I'm John, Get Out and Drive Podcast. And I'm always promoting and I'm shoving my decals and everything down everybody's throat. People are like, oh man, this is bitching. They reach into their pocket and they do a decal swap. And it was instant that people were like, oh yeah, that's cool. Here's my stuff. Oh, here's my stuff. And people whip their phone out and they're like, hang on 1 second. Oh shit, I already follow you. And they're like, oh, well, hang on, I don't follow you on this platform. And they were instantly follow. That's what my takeaway. That's what I saw.
So to sum things up, I think we can all agree on a couple of things. So one is that natural patina wins the game 100% of the time. I think we can also agree that no matter what form of platform you happen to be a part of, that when you get together, people come together and become a community and offer to help. They're very friendly. Different cultures get together, no matter what it happens to be. In this case today, it just happened to be C10s.
Well, or as Robbie says, it united by trucks.
United by trucks, absolutely. And that's kind of the whole point of this show today. Do I see C10s in the city becoming more of a UBT, United by Trucks, type of a show? Quite possibly. I wouldn't want to put my name on that by no means. But at the end of the day, I think that we can all agree we had a great time. We saw a lot of really nice trucks, and that Rick and Sarah put on a really great show.
Yeah, that was the thing I wanted to lean into a little more, is number three, Rick and Sarah. We all, if there truly were 250 trucks there today, right? Like 250 people got to really enjoy themselves based off of the hard work, the planning. And I think that stuff goes unnoticed sometimes, and can't say enough about thank you. Thank you, Rick and Sarah, for putting this on, for giving us a destination today.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole point of the show today was to support the Pink Fund in support of cancer awareness. They were giving away some door prizes, and some of those, one of those door prizes even said F cancer, basically because they're doing everything they can, because Sarah had her bout with breast cancer, that they wanted to make sure that they could raise some money to help others in need. And like I said when I was interviewing Sarah, two great things. One was a really great Chuck show. Two was for a really good cause. So I think we can kind of put a pin in that and say thank you to Rick and Sarah for such a great show, for such a great cause. And we hope that maybe next year, Get Out and Drive podcast and be part of it again.
National Get Out and Drive Day is slated for October 1st, 2023. Have you signed up yet? Visit getoutanddrive.com for more details.
Cruise on over to our website, getoutanddrive.com, for all the info you never wanted to know about our podcast. Hit us up on our listener hotline, be the first to know what's happening, get industry news, and grab your Get Out and Drive merch. Connect with us on social media. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Follow us on Twitter at Get Out and Drive Pod.
What drives you?